Good evening, everybody out there on VBS Radio Land. This is the Win Free Hour, Monday night conference call and simulcast with Internet Radio on VBS. And Win will be with us shortly, and also Carla will be with us tonight. So there will be questions and answers, and I'm not sure, he never tells me what the topic is, but I'm not sure what the topic is, but he will be talking about that with Carla. So we are on the air live, and we're glad that each and every person is with us tonight. My name is Terry Brown, and I have been channeling or bringing through transmissions from the Elohim and Ra group. It's a combination of a section of the Ra group and a section of the Elohim group. So they manifested together to give us a broader band base so that we can connect better, because they cover more frequencies and they can provide answers to questions. The Elohim group is a very loving group that has never incarnated into the third density. Sometimes they're mixed up with in people's minds and with the Anunnaki. The Anunnaki are a race that probably used to be Elohim souls and then incarnated, and they became traders. I don't mean that in the sense of betrayal. I mean that they would trade goods from planet to planet. And they visited on the Earth plane. Some individuals have given them credit with the development of the human being. I don't hear Wynn in the background yet, and I don't hear Carla. So, Wynn, are you there? And Carla, are you there? All right. Thank you, Seth. I'm going to check and see on the progress. Wynn sets up the conference call before he goes on the air. So then when he goes on the air, he brings the conference call people in with him. Wynn is about to call Seth.
I'm going to call Carla.
Seth, if you're listening, would you call Carla? Okay, great. And Wynn will be right with us and bring in the conference call people. For those of you who are new to the line, Carla Leckert is a well-known channel who has been channeling the Ra group, and she did that from 1981 to 1984, and she made a book available called The Law of One. She did it with her husband, Don Elkins, at the time. She currently is channeling the Quo group as, I believe it was in the 80s or so, Don Elkins passed away. And after that, she didn't have the anchors necessary to bring in the Ra group. I would recommend everyone to go to her site, LOResearch.com, and you can see the whole archive of channelings that are available there. She's made the majority of her work available for free. She has published a number of books. One of them is on the it's a channeling handbook. And then she's published The Law of One, which is very deep data from the interdimensional source of Ra. And it's been a very popular book. It's available on Amazon. And I believe it's available on her website. You can also read the back calls, back transcripts that Carla has concerning being on the show with Lynn. And Carla has made these transcripts available, along with transcripts of interviews she's had with other people. So it's a big source of data on the website. Data that one cannot find anywhere else. Lynn, are you on the line yet? He should be with us. It is Carla answering. Okay, good. The last time she was on, she went through three phones. She went through three phones before she could find a reliable phone that would bring her onto the broadcast. But we do expect her momentarily, and we expect Lynn to be on also. The majority of you are the ones that have been on the call before have probably heard Lynn's story about how he got into this interdimensional communication. I've known Lynn for probably 35 years. And during that time, he started out, he was selling sunglasses. In fact, I helped him set up the sunglass business. And he was going around to fairs, but he was very unhappy with doing that because he's so metaphysical and he's so talented as a musician that he really was in the wrong business. He wasn't interested in channeling. And in 1995, I was attending channeling classes with Cheryl Taylor. And we would go once a week. Sounds like Lynn is on the line. Lynn?
Carla? Oh, you're doing such a good job. Who wants to talk to me?
Everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, Winfrey.
Oh, yeah. We have a really good call tonight with Carla Ruckert.
And the record, okay?
Yeah. Thank you. That is my production manager. And hang on a second. Let me start a recorder.
Please enter your PIN followed by pound. Please wait. You are not authorized to start a recording at this time. Please contact customer service if you need assistance.
Now that we actually are on the line, if you're just getting on.
Please enter your PIN followed by pound. Please wait. This conference is now being recorded.
This is Monday, December 20th, and this is Winfrey, and this is our Monday night conference call simulcast on BBS Radio. And the general topic, if topic is the right word, the general theme is the dimensional shift, what I call interdimensional communication. Is there consciousness in other levels that's positive that can help us? And
hello,
can we believe they're real? And we have three people on the line. I hear Carla in the background, who have all had an ongoing experience with what I call interdimensional intelligence. And not just interdimensional, any old interdimensional intelligence, because there's a lot of things that you could put under that category that are at different levels of density, wisdom, and some are even negative, and some look are negative, and they look like they're positive, and some are positive and look like they're negative. And so this is like if you're a human in this realm trying to figure out what is up and what is down, you have your work cut out for you, because on this show, we're not telling you to believe anything, but there's a tremendous amount of stories and experiences and circumstances that give indication that the sources that we are communicating with, and I have my once-a-month guest, Carla Ruckert, and our topic tonight is Christmas, and the sources that we are communicating with are not just any old sources, at least not by the way they describe themselves. They, both sources, have done interventions throughout the history of mankind in this realm, and at different times, their interventions, when they spoke to somebody, at least in the old days, to my take, were interpreted as God. Now, they were not God in the way religion might make God out to be, but at different times, they allowed themselves, this is my take, Carla, you can comment on this, they allowed themselves to be interpreted that way because one of their MOs, modus operandums, was free will, and that they wanted to help us, but they couldn't do it unless we asked. We had to ask for their help. And so the traditional model of God was, it's complicated how that all developed, and I don't want to go into the long discussion, but I believe in the short discussion, these group souls would allow themselves to be interpreted that way because it would allow us to ask. And if we asked with the right intention, whether we knew it was a group soul, whether we looked at it as the one infinite creator, whether we looked at it as God, the traditional view of God, if our intention was strong enough, our request would break through the veil and give them a way to reach back. And that, in my take of this, we're going to talk about Jesus. Jesus was a, how do I say this? A co-creation of these group souls. That it was a extremely well-designed, planned-out co-creation to make a contribution to this realm that had the potential to lift the vibration of humanity. And that I have looked at this very deeply. I've looked at it through Carla's channelings, through my channelings, through history, and that's the conclusion I came to. And that Carla is the very, famous is not a good word to use, respected, highly intended channel of what has been called the Ra group, which is comprised of souls that have gone through periods of reincarnation and gone through evolution in other dimensions for millions of years, and now act as a team, a group, to contribute to our realm. And Terry Brown, who is on the line, is channeled a voice that has described itself. And notice I'm saying described himself. I don't want you to believe this. You have to be intrigued enough that if anything resonates, to reach further and do your own investigations. The voice speaking through Terry has described itself as the Council of Elohim, and they explain themselves to be an energy prior to the beginning of the physical realm that by and large have never embodied. Some of them have, and they're still stuck here, and some of them that have become, it's complicated, we don't have to give all the details, but by and large, they've never embodied. They existed pure energy at the center of creation, and both group souls have involved themselves in the spiritual evolution of our planet at different times in history. And my take is that Jesus was very connected to all of this. And Terry, one of the things that triggered this for me as I was investigating all this was when I asked, was Terry ever anybody famous? And they said, look up St. Catherine of Siena. And I looked up St. Catherine, and I found out that St. Catherine lived in 1400 A.D. that used to go to the local monastery in Siena, Italy. The other nuns and priests would write down everything she said because they thought God was speaking through her. And St. Catherine's dialogues with God are an official part of Catholic history and still sold on Amazon. And Terry was the spitting image of St. Catherine. So I went and read those dialogues, and what I saw was this incredible wisdom being delivered, very similar to the wisdom that Jesus delivered, but it was being delivered under the auspices of Jesus, because this was a church. It wouldn't be accepted if it wasn't under those auspices. Carla happens to be she goes to church every Sunday. She would consider herself a Christian, I believe, and she produces her weekly quote channelings because they help people that don't have this kind of connection. She said that on the call. So on that note, I better introduce my co-hosts tonight, who are Carla and Terry, to what's going to be, I think, a very interesting conversation on the real nature of Christmas. Hi, Carla. I hope you're there.
Hey, Wynn. I sure am.
Did I stick my foot in my mouth?
No, not at all.
Okay.
How is the one known as Terry?
The one known as Terry.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello. Hi, Carla.
You know
hi there.
It's interesting you said the one known as Terry, because I call them the voice that identifies itself as the Ra or the Elohim. They look at us, the one known as Terry, right, or the one known as Carla. So, Carla, you have anything you want to add to my little introduction?
Just that the kind of Christian that I am is mystical. I don't do dogma.
Yes.
I left dogma at the door a long time ago during my religious
mm-hmm.
period when I was about 14. And I told my bishop, I don't think I can keep on as a Christian because I don't believe in the virgin birth. And he stroked his big chin and he said, you know, I have trouble with that one myself. And I said, well, how do you say
right.
the creed? I was astounded. And he said, well, I say the creed in hope, you know. one of these days I'll understand what the mystery is all about. Probably not in this lifetime. He says, don't let it worry you. You'll just never be able to talk about Jesus if you leave the church. And I know that you're one who truly believes. And I am, because I had personal experiences with Jesus when I was a little toddler. And Jesus was a friend of mine. So it was very real to me very early about Jesus. And I've been attempting to serve him and to be the kind of creature of love that I perceived him to be when I was a toddler. So I've known him personally. And people say, well, when did you take Jesus Christ as your personal Savior? Well, I never really had the opportunity because he was my friend. And I would look into his eyes. He never would say a word to me, but he would look into my eyes and I would look back. And I would know what love was by looking into that golden gaze. So from the very beginning, I knew that I was here on earth to serve, and I wanted to serve the way Jesus served, to serve other people, to love other people and be a voice of love. So that's the nature of my Christianity, and I think it figures that I would be concerned for people who don't have Jesus, and that my thinking at Christmas time is not about those who have Jesus, but about those who do not. So I think, you know, the area of my concern is to be able to offer thoughts about Jesus that will not strike non-Christians as sappy or disgusting or impossible to comprehend or whatever. And, you know, I might possibly give people another resource, because Jesus is a resource not just for Christians, but for Buddhists and for anybody that wants to identify an absolutely positive source in our history of love and light. Jesus was that entity. I looked up Jesus while you were talking about him in the raw material, and I found in this segment Don's questioning about the entity known as Jesus of Nazareth. And basically, he asked what the raw group could tell him about Jesus of Nazareth. Did he come from the Confederation? And Ra said, the one known to you as Jesus of Nazareth did not have a name. This entity was a member of fourth density at the highest level of that sub-octave. This entity was desirous of entering this planetary sphere in order to share the love vibration in as pure a manner as possible. Thus, this entity received permission to perform his mission. This entity was then a wanderer of Confederation origin of fourth density, representing the fourth density's understanding of the vibration of understanding or love. The fourth density is often called the density of love and understanding. So then Don immediately asked, the next question that he asked that was ad rem was Jesus of Nazareth, when Jesus of Nazareth incarnated, was there an attempt by the Orion group to discredit him in some way? The Orion group being negatively oriented source of information, just as the Confederation is a positively oriented source of information. And Ross said, this is correct. And Don said, can you tell me what the Orion group did in order to cause his downfall? And Ross said, we may describe in general what happened. The technique was that of building upon other negatively oriented information. This information had been given by the one your peoples called Yahweh. That would be Jehovah. This information involved many strictures upon behavior and promised power of the third density service to self-nature. These two types of distortion were impressed upon those already oriented to think these thought forms. This eventually led to many challenges of the entity known as Jesus. It eventually led to one sound vibration complex, Judas, as you call this entity, who believed he was doing the appropriate thing in bringing about or forcing the one known as Jesus to bring in the third density planetary power distortion of third density rule over others. In other words, Judas wanted Jesus to take an earthly crown, which was what had been predicted for the Messiah. The entity felt, Judas felt, that if pushed into a corner, Jesus would then be able to see the wisdom of using the power of intelligent infinity in order to rule others. The one you call Judas was mistaken in his estimation of the reaction of Jesus, whose teached learning was not oriented toward this distortion. This resulted in the destruction of the bodily complex of the one known as Jesus. So, basically, the story is that the choice was between the kingdom of the world and the kingdom of the Creator, the Father's world. And Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. And he said, get thee behind me, Satan. Now, he didn't say it to Judas. He said that far earlier in his ministry, 3 years before when he began the ministry, the first thing he did was get tempted, it says in the Bible, by Satan. Well, whoever Satan was, whoever that was, offered him to rule the world. He says, I'll give you everything. Just belong to me. Jesus said, no. He said, well, cast yourself down from this high mountain and let the angels save you, and that'll prove that you are who you say you are. Jesus said, no, don't want to prove anything. Just here to share some love. And so he ended up on the cross. And remember that it was on the cross that he was hanging between a couple of thieves, and one of the thieves, who obviously had more wit than the other one, who was still reviling Jesus and his fate and everything, he turned to Jesus and he said, Jesus, you know, when you come into your kingdom, will you remember me? And without batting an eye, Jesus says, this day you'll be with me in paradise. So you see, Jesus forgave all, loved all, did not judge any. And I think it's a wonderful icon on the desktop of philosophy for the absolutely purely positive point of view, positively oriented to service to others, not oriented to judgment, not oriented to excluding anybody. So this time of year, the way I see what Jesus has to offer non-Christians is an image. And I love to think of this image. It's the image of the rough straw of the stable and the warm, intimate smell of animals who were in from the cold. The ox and the ass before him stood, Jesus, our brother, strong and good. So here's Jesus, this little baby, completely vulnerable, completely helpless, powerless in any earthly sense. Adored by his mother, of course, as all babies are by just about all mothers. And what I see for non-Christians is that whoever we are, Jesus firmly believed when he grew up that we were like him, that he was not special, that what he could do, we could do, and more. And so he encouraged us all to visit the prisoner, to visit the orphan and the widow, to take care of each other. Feed my sheep, he said again and again. And, you know, he gave us two commandments to replace the whole Old Testament, both the law and the prophets. He said, love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself, which, of course, is just saying the law of one another way. We are all one, so, of course, to love another human being is the same as loving yourself. And, of course, that's where we get hung up. We do need to love ourselves first, and then we can love everybody else, too. But to me, Christmas is this wonderful image where we can all imagine ourselves as Mary taking our spiritual infants, that part of ourselves that we want to help mature during this incarnation, and rocking that precious child and helping that child to survive and to thrive until that child spirit becomes old enough in incarnation to begin helping us, to begin bringing us guidance and bringing us love. And I think that if we can see ourselves there, kneeling in the rough straw, smelling those smells of animals and hay and new baby, and ask ourselves, what is the situation with my spirit tonight? can I make an intention tonight to take care of my spirit, to act in such a way that I'm supporting and encouraging the spirit within me? Then I think that Jesus would be satisfied and wouldn't try to get you to believe in him or in the church that he did not found. I believe he would be very satisfied if you just honored yourself, respected yourself, encouraged yourself, and believed in yourself, that you have the cloak of Christhood within you, and you can be a servant of love.
Well, the show's over. Thank you. That, Carla, is a hard act to follow. And that was really beautiful. And I would ask you for your opinion that I believe it was 300 years after Jesus, the Roman the Roman government decided to take the Jesus phenomena,
right,
and they rewrote the Bible or edited it in the Council of Nicaea, so that they could, since Jesus was getting so popular, that instead of trying to be in antagonism to the popularity, they rewrote the Bible to attempt to use Jesus as a way for them to have more power. And that churches that were following the Bible after that had a distortion on the idea of Jesus based on that translation. In other words, Jesus said, the Father and I are one, I'm one with you, and that these things I do, you can do. And instead, he became exalted like something to believe in rather than something to experience in your heart. That's my take on that. And that's one of the reasons that religion has created in many ways for many people. It doesn't mean somebody can't use religion as a path to God, but that people can think that they give their loyalty in their mind rather than their heart, and they miss the boat.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. The way that the Roman Empire decided to choose Christianity as the state religion had to do with a battle. It was a battle on the water, and it's been long enough since I read the history of it that I have forgotten which emperor it was, Caesar it was, that made this decision. But he got spooked, actually. It looked like the battle was going against him. Then he saw a cross on the water. What that is, I'm not sure. It could have been part of a bireme or a trireme, a big old boat that had been shot up and down and was disintegrating into the water as flotsam and jetsam. And maybe, you know, part of a spar crashed down and it was burning both across the spar and down the mast. But at any rate, he saw a cross of fire and he thought, that's it. I'm going over to the Christian side. We're going to win this war. And they did win the war, you see. At least they won that battle. So he declared that Christianity was the state religion. So it was based on non-religious things from the beginning and had nothing to do with religion whatsoever. It had to do with politics. But the church fathers from the very beginning, and this was before the Council of Nicaea even, were just playing hob with the Bible. I mean, they threw out books. They threw out over half of the books that had originally been collected into the Bible. And we don't have all of them now, but we have some of them in the Apocrypha, and we have others in various Gospels that have surfaced since, plus all of the Nag Hammadi manuscripts that were found in jars in the desert, rather incredibly perfectly preserved after thousands of years lately. And they were translated lately, so from the Aramean. So there were a lot of Essene works. There were a lot of other works that were written about Jesus that got tossed out. But what happened at the Council of Nicaea and thereafter was that various concepts that Jesus taught and that were understood in the Middle East and in his time, and actually in the Middle East are still understood, including reincarnation above all, were considered to be politically incorrect because of the fact that if people thought they had another shot to come around and try all of it again, they wouldn't be giving their money to the church for indulgences to pardon sins of the past and to pay for the souls of those gone on in novenas. So a source of income would have dried up if people believed in reincarnation. So it was considered necessary to extirpate all mention of reincarnation from the Bible. Of course, it wasn't successful. There are lots of, a few instances where Jesus obviously was referring to incarnation. When he said, for instance, well, Peter, who do you think those people were? And, you know, and he was saying, well, you know, you could have been John the Baptist, or maybe you could have been Elijah. And, you know, so it was on the table then, and it was impossible to take it out of the Bible completely. But there was a lot of diddling with the Bible. And then, as you said, when they translated the Bible from Aramean, Hebrew, and Greek into Latin, it was called the Vulgate, which means for the common person. And they diddled a lot with it then. So you have translations from the Vulgate that are far from accurate, and probably the most accurate version of the Bible is the one that's called the Peshitta text, and it's taken directly from the Aramean by George Lamsa. And my husband and I have been enjoying reading that. But there is a tremendous problem with paying attention to what people say about the church, because there's been a whole theology written by those who are not paying any attention to what Jesus actually said, but who are making political moves to support an earthly organization, a worldly organization that has a tremendous amount of influence, power, and money. That's the Roman Catholic Church. And since I'm an Episcopalian, I'm sort of, you know, an offshoot of the Roman Catholic Church. The Episcopalians or the Anglican Communion in general shares the liturgy, shares the basic belief system, the belief that in the Holy Communion you actually are eating the body and blood of Jesus Christ. There's a transubstantiation taking place. The priest calls Jesus into the wafers and the wine, and then the people imbibe that little bit of wafer and wine. They're imbibing the very body and blood of Jesus Christ, and they take that with them, and they are made new by that. So that is the basic belief system that I share with Roman Catholics. What I don't share with Roman Catholics, because the Anglicans reject the whole idea of it, is the guilt and the judgment. We don't guilt people because they don't believe the way we do. And we don't rain down judgment on their heads because they don't believe the way we do. We just say, okay, well, that's fine, and move on. And it's a very civilized kind of way to attend services with others who love Jesus. So I'm not saying that, as Wynn said, I'm not saying that you can't follow Jesus and have a wonderful time in church. I've been a member of one choir or another since I was 4 years old. I hope to be a member of a choir singing the day I die. It's a wonderful part of my life and faith. But what I have to give to people really has to do more with the channeling that I began doing in 74 and that I continue doing to this day. And L&L Research, the organization that Don Elkins and I founded in 1970 to share our research with the world, it's always been for the seekers. The whole idea here is not to discover anything in particular, but to try to find the best information that we can and then share it for free. So that's what we've done since we got our website up in the 80s. And we've done that ever since. We've got a lot of stuff that people can check out. And I encourage you to do it. But as Wynn said, there's no way that I want to convince you to believe in Jesus, or that I want to convince you to believe in Ra, or that I want to convince you to believe in anything whatsoever. I just encourage you to be attentive and be present in the present moment, and take yourself seriously, because you can make a ton of mistakes, and spiritually speaking, it doesn't matter. You can have bad judgment. You can read the wrong channeling for you and get yourself in a lot of blind alleys. You just back out of them and start over and say, well, I learned a lot from that one, didn't I? And don't worry. Just keep gathering your information, and keep listening to yourself and following the path of resonance for yourself. And I think that you'll be glad you did, because it's a wonderful life, as a certain movie has been known to tell us all. When you do take yourself seriously enough to jump out of that box, wake up, and start experiencing life as a sacred person who is on the Creator's business and who wants to be a secret agent of love.
Let me
I don't hear you, Wynn.
Let me say something. My phone is not charging for some reason. And Terry's on the line, so if someone's on the conference call, maybe you could tune this in on your internet, and if I drop out, which I think I'm going to within a few minutes, you could be playing it over the internet, and I'll just continue on Terry's phone. So whoever does that, thank you for doing it.
Star 6 to be able to do that, please.
Star 6? Yeah, okay. Yeah, press star 6 so you're not muted. And then start playing it. And then Hives will tell you if you're not being heard. And I want to give Terry a chance to say something, because obviously, if we're correct, and Terry happened to have been a person who was, in our channelings, they said St. Catherine was channeling Ra when she was taking the role in the church of talking God. So, Terry, why don't you share a little bit about how you relate to all this?
Well, when I was a little kid, I was very interested in the Bible, and I kept reading it. And when I was about in my early teens, the church asked me if I would become a teacher, a Sunday school teacher. So I became a Sunday school teacher for the second and third grade at the time. And we had a very interesting time where I would have the kids make a drawing, and then we would pin them together and we would roll them on each end so they could make a movie of the stories that we were going through. And I totally did not understand the Trinity, and so I, as well as the virgin birth, so I didn't cover those when I would teach. When it would come to those lessons in the book, I would just skip over them really fast and pick areas that didn't talk about them. And so it had always been in my mind to attempt to understand the Trinity and to really try, but not talk about it until I could understand it. And lately, over the last few years, with the interdimensional communications, I've begun to understand the Trinity. So I've noticed about Christmas that it's a wonderful time when people start thinking of each other and caring for each other, communicating with each other, sending them gifts and presents. And so I really like Christmas time and the holidays. It's a whole warm feeling that comes over people, and the Christmas music. And when I grew up in New York State, we would go down shopping in downtown Rochester, New York, and the Christmas music would play and the snow would be coming down. And it was a lovely season. So those are my thoughts on this.
Okay. So my phone just went dead. And of course, can you hear me, Carla?
I can. You're doing fine on Terry's phone.
Yeah. Okay. So the people on the conference call, I hope somebody is doing what I asked. And
I hope so, too.
So, you know, I think that one of the incredible things about these communications from other realms is that it takes some of the, you know, there's an interesting thing. There has to be a mystery. As soon as your mind thinks you understand it, you've kind of blown it, because the truth lies in the spaces. It lies in between the thoughts. It doesn't, interdimensional connection is in between thoughts, in between the words, and that when you start to tear the space of in between the words, you start to co-create what I call co-creation, where people come together, and it's the truth is in space. It's not in words. And that the aspect of Jesus was his ability to create the space for people to co-create. And when people co-create, they start loving each other as an automatic byproduct, because they're in the spaces before. In the space is the history of the universe. In the space, there's all the dimensions. In the space, there's the place where all time comes together, and not in the mind. And of course, in America, in the world, the mind has taken such a dominant role in trying to understand. Well, the fact that there is this huge resource of material in the raw material and in the work that I'm doing and Terry's doing and Daphne has been done, there's this explanation for how things work that the mind can grab onto, that the mind can say, that makes more sense than this mythology of the way God and Jesus are expressed. But it still doesn't solve the mystery. It just gets you closer to the core of the mystery, which is in the spaces. And that's why the study of this material can be so important, because the mind, many of the distortions that people have are in their minds, and trying to understand things in their minds. And when you can give a higher level explanation for how things work, it moves you closer to the truth of the experience. So that is, does that make any sense to you, Carla?
Oh, yes. I think what you're calling space is the Confederation philosophers, like those of Ra and those of Kuo, would call it time-space, as opposed to space-time. Space-time is a dimension that has physicality and mm-hmm. chemistry. And we have chemically oriented physical vehicles, heavy, massive, we have weight, and the time-space distortion is one where the bodies and the illusion are all electrical and made completely of light and don't have mass. So you have the metaphysical realms, which are inner, because they don't show up in manifestation, but they use inner light. And then you have the outer manifestation of third density, which is all by itself in being a physically created universe, strictly physical. It's the only one that's behind the veil of forgetting. It's the only one that we have to navigate by faith alone. We cannot prove anything spiritual. We'd be foolish to try. It's arranged for our free will, but we do not have the ability to prove a life in faith. All we can do is live one, take that leap into the midair of faith, and then discover, oh my gosh, you know, this midair is holding me. And I'm getting feedback from the universe that tells me that I'm on the right track. And the more that you lean into faith and believe that all is well and then just try to cooperate with what's happening rather than resisting it, the more feedback you get from spirit. And pretty soon you're just popping along having all kinds of odd little coincidences that say, yes, okay, thank you very much, creation. I'll pay attention to that thought, you know. Something will come on the radio that echoes the thought, or you'll see 1111 or 1010 or something, repeating numbers on the clock. And when you do that, just pay attention, because spirit's saying, that thought you just had, there's something to it. So what were you thinking? And think about it some more, because it's a good thought. And, you know, as you start getting subjective proof for yourself only, then you become much more sure-footed. Metaphysically speaking. But I look forward to being an electrically oriented being that does not have a heavy chemical vehicle and that does not have a veil of forgetting, so that I know so much more about what I'm thinking and what everybody else is thinking as well. It's hard to know what you're thinking. Have you ever noticed that? So often what you actually think is hidden from you because it goes against the culture, or it goes against your teachers or your parents, and you've been told, no, you don't think like that, you think like this. And, you know, you want to grease the social wheels. You can't disagree with people that are responsible for your survival when you're very young. So a lot of the time you're telling yourself half lies, and you're not intending to be a hypocrite, but you're just not examining the basic assumptions that you live your life by. And, you know, it's a really good idea when you're trying to communicate to yourself or to others, check your assumptions. And do I still believe that? Or has my opinion changed in the years since I was a little one? So I think it's a wonderful thing to keep investigating and keep looking and keep seeking within yourself. In the spaces, as Wynn said, because in the spaces, in the silence between words, is all the information of the Creator. It's the still, small voice of the Bible that holds all the information in the universe, and it is available to your subconscious mind. So when you avail yourself through meditation or walking in nature, or by reading inspiring books and then contemplating what you just read. There are so many ways of inviting the silence. But they involve taking the time to do that, turning off the world, turning off the computer, turning off the TV, the radio, the iPod, and so forth, and letting silence reign. And you can think to yourself, well, you know, I'm tabernacling. You know, this is my time to sit in a tent with the Creator. And the tent is in my own heart. It's in that stable I was talking about with the rough straw. I'm going to go back to that stable, and I'm going to sit there. And I'm going to spend some time listening to the Creator's silence and letting it soak into me, because it's going to bubble up in my life when I need it. And it's going to give me hints of what I really want to do.
Carla?
Yes.
We are out of time officially. 6:51.
I was just finished, so that works out perfectly.
But I wanted to suggest, before we, if Seth doesn't cut us off, we could probably take another minute. And could you lead us spontaneously in a short prayer to connect with the Creator, connect with sources, to get us all set up for Christmas? Am I putting you on the spot? You can say?
I would love to do that.
Go ahead.
Dear Creator, we stand before you empty of all pretense, humble in heart, not pretending to know anything, but just full of love for you. Thank you for loving us so dearly. I honestly don't care whether you went to heaven, whether you rose from the dead, or whether you just had that look in your eye that said you were glad to give your life because you loved us so much. Teach us to love. Teach us to care. Teach us your way. Teach us the true meaning of Christmas. Amen.
Thank you. We're going to end this call. Thank you all for being here and supporting this. And those of you that have questions at messageoday.net for this Wednesday. And Carla, thank you for coming on and being our guest every month.
Such a pleasure, Wynn. And Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays to everybody.
Thank you.
And dig the solstice tonight. I mean, the lunar eclipse that precedes the solstice by less than 24 hours. I'm excited. It's going to be a dark night. The darkest night for 600 years. So let's give everything to the dark that belongs in the dark. And embrace the light as it increases every day.
Great. Okay. We'll see you next month. And have a wonderful Christmas, everybody, if this is the last time you touch into us.